sweat technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blankers, I am Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. Would you rather have a defensive end that gives you 12.5 sacks or a defensive tackle that gives you 9? 713-780-3776. What do you think, Blankers? Defensive end, 12.5, defensive tackle that gives you 9?
I'm taking the defensive tackle. I'm taking the defensive tackle for a variety of reasons because, one, I'm really kind of fixated on Christian Wilkins, and I'm like, This is the ideal guy once Miami made him a cap casualty the other day. It's like, this is the ideal guy that D'Amico's looking for. He's looking for a guy that wreaks havoc inside, that's still capable of getting to the quarterback, but does even more of what D'Amico wants to do, which is regulate and stop the run better and be kind of a guy that steps up. And from a salary perspective, if you're going out and looking at the salaries of what he's definitely the top-end guy of the interior defensive lineman, I think his salary is going to be less than some of the outside pass rushers. And I think that in D'Amico's system and with what D'Amico has told us, I think he is the best fit, and a player like that would be the best way to go get a guy that can complement your entire defense, starting with Will Anderson.
Yeah, I'm a defensive tackle, 9 sack over defensive end, 12.5 sacks. And Christian Wilkins this past year in Miami from the interior, 9 sacks. Grenard had 12.5 sacks for the Texans. You ask a quarterback what gives them the most trouble, it's getting pressure from the interior of the offensive line. Also, the secondary point to this is, where can you find, like, if you're picking the 9 sack defensive tackle over the 12.5 sack defensive end, the next guy up for the defensive end position is still probably going to rack up a few sacks. Mm-hmm. Might not be 12.5, maybe it's 7, maybe it's 8. But if you pick the 12.5 sack defensive end, where are you getting 9 sacks from a defensive tackle? Like, the next guy up is going to have 2. So it's easier to replace, in my mind, that defensive end that gives you the 12.5 than a defensive tackle that gives you 9. And that's where the conversation's at. It's between Grenard. Now, Christian Wilkins is not somebody who, like, has racked up a bunch of sacks in his career. The most sacks he had in a single season before last year with 9 was 4.5 in 2021. But he was also playing end back then.
Plus,
he's kind of new to the position. He's only been in the position for a few years, new defense, et cetera, et cetera.
Plus, the players around you matter and the system. And I think this is the perfect system for him to continue to flourish. Because of what D'Amico's done and what D'Amico wants to do, I think he'd be great. I just think that the fact that, you know, you look at Matabuke from Baltimore as well, and he got tagged, but you can see that there's an added value now in those interior defensive linemen that can still get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And I think that he would be an ideal fit for this defense.
Yeah, I would pick Wilkins over Grenard, quite frankly. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Tom from Beaumont, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's going on, Tom?
Hey, fellas. I was going to say this, that if you have a defensive tackle, like you guys said, that is getting 9 sacks, that's getting 9 sacks. That's probably, I don't know how many hurries, but it's probably double that, and it's collapsing the pocket, and you got a guy that's staying out there for 3 downs instead of getting pulled off. So it's a special player. And if you have a 9-sack defensive tackle that's a 3-down player, you're going to have more than you can take an above-average defensive end that's going to pick up 12.5, or should, or you got some problems at defensive end. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Tom. Look, I think the other thing too, Jeremy, it's kind of like we talked about when we talk about running backs, and Caserio showed you a little of that at the end of the season. When you say the fact that you put in you still had Jerry Hughes and you put in a Barnett and some of the guys he picked up late, you can have a musical chairs on the end that between the players that you're rotating could still end up with a pretty high sack total, especially because so much attention is being paid to Will Anderson, and maybe even more attention would have to be paid to a Wilkins in the middle of the line.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. When you look at the quarterback hits, Grenard, he had 12.5 sacks, 22 quarterback hits. Wilkins had 9 sacks, 23 quarterback hits. And then you look at, like, TFLs, because I think TFLs are just as valuable as sacks, right? Grenard had 15 and Wilkins had 10. So Grenard had more, but also did it from a defensive end position. I think you can find a replacement-level defensive end that's going to give you closer to that production. It won't be as good, but closer to that production than a replacement level defensive tackle to Christian Wilkins. So that's where I stand on that. Brian, how about these tiers? We saw Bill Barnwell come out. He's been doing these free agent tiers. Defensive line fits this conversation today because we're talking about Grenard, talking about Wilkins. What do we make of the defensive tiers, and which transitions, what do you think would be best transition to the Texans in free agency?
Yeah, so when I looked at these tiers, and just right off the top, I'll mention he breaks them into two groups, obviously edge rusher and interior defensive line, defensive tackle. Jonathan Grenard for the edge rusher is in tier three. There isn't a single tier one edge rusher, and the only tier two edge rusher is Daniil Hunter from, or formerly now of the Vikings. So when I was looking at this list and the projected AAVs, obviously, I marked off Chris Jones right away. It's going to cost too much, and I think he's going back to Kansas City. He's not even going to consider leaving there or signing with the Texans. There's no edge rusher at the top of the list, and as you start to look down, if we take D'Amico Ryans at his word, what he said at the end of the season, that like the most important thing for the Texans to do was to improve that defensive front. There's no tier one pass rusher. There's only one tier two, and it's Daniel Hunter, who's about 30 years old. You don't know if you want to pay him a multi-year contract. And then you look at the defensive tackle side, Chris Jones is basically off the board. So you're kind of, I think, pigeonholed into the tier three of the edge rushers. And it's a good list there. I mentioned, obviously, Jonathan Grenard's in that list. A name we brought up last week, and Bryce Huff is on that list. Leonard Floyd, Jadeveon Clowney, who I know you like, Jeremy, as a possible one-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with him.
Okay, well, sure. You'd be fine with him as a signing for the Texans. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I'm not banging the table.
On a one-year deal, though, right?
I feel like you're nitpicking a little bit what I said there. All I said is you like him. I didn't say you're in love with him.
Well, I just don't want to be I don't want to be known as a Jadeveon Clowney stan. I want to get out ahead of that. That's the last thing I want to be.
So when you're looking at these tiers, there's really no one in the top two tiers at edge rusher that you can get. Chris Jones is off the board. I love the guys available as the tier three edge rushers. But the name that, and Joel just brought him up earlier in the segment, the name that stands out to me that you have to get is Christian Wilkins, because the drop-off after Christian Wilkins, is, if you want a pass rusher there, and I think you do for all the reasons you guys mentioned earlier in the segment, there's really no other guy after him that's going to provide you that sort of production. And same thing at edge rusher, there's really no guy after the tier three. When you get into tier four and beyond, there's not really a whole lot of guys. I mean, tier four includes Chase Young, so there's really not a lot there that's actually going to transform the defensive front like D'Amico wants. So looking at that, seeing what's available, seeing what you could actually get and how steep the drop off is, it led me to believe you spend your money in free agency on Christian Wilkins, you draft your edge rusher probably in the first round of the defensive draft, and that is how you fix this defensive line. I don't think there's a lot of value in bargain shopping in these two positions beyond tier three tier three for edge rusher and tier two for interior defensive line.
Plus, when you're looking at just overall, there's going to be corners both in free agency, but we've heard it's a deep, deep draft in terms of corners if you want to draft one. But the two primary needs that you have that are literally premier defensive positions are those two positions. And that's why I believe that Wilkins being the cap casualty that goes right to the top of the list just seems like too perfect a fit to go from. And I don't know what they're projecting his salary to be. It's got to be close to 20, I would think.
It's 19 to 25.
Yeah, see, and I think that, again, when we talk about the threshold, I don't want to go over 20 for him, but if I can get him in that range for a couple of years and I know the impact just stopping the run and doing what D'Amico wants him to do, like you said, Brian, but still being able to rush the quarterback and put pressure, I think that the return on investment has the chance to be so much greater than just the pass rusher, pure pass rusher on the outside.
I want to sign Wilkins, and I want to sign one of those third-tier-ish defensive ends on a one-year deal with the idea of I'm hoping that I draft over him and he becomes my third defensive end. But I have to be willing that if I don't have a defensive end that I like at 23 or I can't make a trade up, I have to be willing to allow that guy to be a starter.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, right, I was thinking about Barnett, but I got to believe that
he's fine. I wouldn't hate that.
I would love bringing him back. But it's just I'm just thinking
as a rotational guy, probably. Though,
yeah,
right?
As a rotational guy, absolutely. And
but
maybe
if you don't draft a rookie, then you have to be willing to allow him to be. It's a rotational guy, but like your primary defensive end, like opposite of Will Anderson.
Yeah. So essentially, He's multifaceted. He could be a rotational guy, but if you don't draft one, he could be your starter on the other side because of how he fit in this system short term. What we saw, you believe, I think this guy can do what he needs to do, especially since you're adding a guy that can be so disruptive in the middle of the line and you have Will Anderson on the other side.
Richard Willey with some pretty good points on ESPN Houston YouTube. You can find us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. He said he wants Khalil Mack. Now, I think they were eventually going to cut
Khalil Mack.
Yeah,
he wasn't listed in this because he'd be a cap casualty, but certainly he could fit the bill.
I'm curious how much he'd be willing, like wanting to get paid, but I would love a Khalil Mack. Still really good last year, obviously. And then he says, only sign Clowney if we give him sack incentives. That's cool. Like I'm
we
didn't
see
totally
Clowney celebrate that in the last
week.
Like
if the money's
season.
The same, do you take Clowney or Mack?
Mack.
Me too.
Yeah, I would take
me
Mack.
Too.
Mack. I don't think the money would be the same, but if it is, Mack. Yeah, there's
you
no
think Mack would be more expensive?
I've always said Khalil Mack is way better than Jadeveon Clowney.
Completely.
Anybody who used to stand for Clowney over Khalil Mack was silly.
But I just don't know how much Mack has left in the tank. You said, you're right.
He was double-digit sacks.
Yeah, he had a good year last year, but that money's going to matter too. He's made a boatload in his career. I just don't know if he's still looking for a 1 year on a pretty spendy deal.
6146, I think signing Wilkins, drafting a corner, and signing Chase Young would go a long way. I'm anti-Chase Young.
Yeah,
I do not like
that.
He's been a super disappointment, really, I mean, outside of his rookie year, his entire career. And his rookie year wasn't even all that fantastic. It was good for a rookie. It wasn't, like, great relative to the best defensive ends in the NFL, and then he's been nothing since.
Yeah,
just look at where the value is. And like, we've talked to so many people who have talked about, Matt Miller told us on Tuesday that the drop-off for edge rushers after round one is pretty steep, whereas corners, has some depth. So, part of that listener's plan was right. I think, obviously you signed Wilkins and your first two picks are defensive pass rusher on the edge and a corner, but I think you flip-flop the rounds. You go corner in round two and draft the edge rusher in round one because the edge rusher's not going to be there in round two.
Chase Young to me is very, very, very busty.
He's a bust for sure.
Yeah, he just, if you couldn't flourish in that San Francisco system with Bosa on the other side and the defensive players that they have, and you couldn't stand out and there was questions of whether you were giving your all on every play for a team that ended up in almost winning the Super Bowl, I just don't know where he's going to play better.
Hell, you couldn't stand out in Washington when their entire defensive line was all first round
picks.
They were. So it wasn't like he didn't have help alongside him in Washington.
Yep. Yeah, not a fan of Chase. 4683, if the defense tackle can also stop the run, I would go with upgrading that spot. 3338, I think I would like to tackle if they get that many sacks. They're probably really disruptive. I like disruption from the interior offensive line. Wreck the quarterback. Maybe put a bounty out for him. 713.
But he can stop the run, too. He's really good. Yeah. He's above average stopping the run, and that's what they need.
Yeah. I think he was responding more to the defensive tackle with 9 sacks, defensive end with 12.5. 713-780-ESPN. Texans signed Dalton Schultz. We know that. But does the Dalton Schultz deal change how you feel about the Texans' handling of a running back? Does it change how you handle Robert Woods? I'll explain. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Want to give a shout-out to Vanderford Air. They're the newest member of the ESPN 97.5 family. They are fantastic. When you need to build up trust, you need someone to help fix your air conditioner or put in a new unit and your HVAC system, you need someone you can trust. That's the biggest thing that you're looking for. And the guarantees and the fact that they are going to stand by what they do also mean a ton. That's why I'm speaking for Vanderford, because they have the Vanderford difference. No overtime or emergency charges. Risk-free satisfaction guarantee. Certified and qualified professionals. No money down. 0% financing. With great ratings and reviews, they are the absolute best in the business. When I say best in the business, it's because it's everything you're looking for, because their guarantees are absolutely legit. Best value at the lowest cost to you. Comfort assurances that are guaranteed. Quality workmanship that's guaranteed. Performance guarantees to make sure that everything operates at factory standards, whether it's a repair or a brand new unit. And the biggest one, 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. That's what you're looking for. We're getting ready to get into the heat of the absolute year. We know the summers are going to be rough, and it gets even rougher if your AC unit isn't working right or completely shuts down. And the other great thing about the people at Vanderford, same day service. You call them, you need them, they're there. The last thing you want to do in the 100 degree heat is call and have to wait several days to get your AC fixed. Check them out today, VanderfordAir.com, or just call them. It's real simple, 281-557-COOL, 281-557-COOL.
Hey, girl.
You're listening to the Killer Bees and some great music presented by RC Ranch.
The official beef jerky of the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
He's the song of Luke Bryan. Such a tones of Luke Bryan. Banger after banger. Great songwriter. I think he wrote the song for you, Blinker.
I noticed he gave you the greeting at the start of the song.
That was my joke. I just said that. He wrote the song for you because of
no,
the
No, because he could have
stole my
written
jokes
it, again. But you weren't referring. That's the whole song.
You're like Carlos Mencia stealing all my jokes.
Okay, Barry.
He did. You stole my joke.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I
Luke Bryan.
Think I described it better.
I don't know.
It's not the whole song. Because what's the name of the song?
I don't know the name of the song.
Well, there you go.
I'm a big country fan girl.
Yeah. There you go. He wrote the song for you, as I said.
Yeah, but you didn't know the name of the song. That takes everything out of the joke.
I knew it was about a girl. He said, hey, girl.
I just said he started the show. The started
I know,
the song
after I said
that.
We made the same joke. I made it first. You made it second.
Woo.
Second time you've stolen one of my jokes today. I have, you know. I like his
Do-I
song. I
don't know if
I
can do the final 30 minutes.
His Buy Dirt song is pretty good. I know that I can't.
Oh, then I'm in.
Dalton Schultz signed a $36 million three-year deal. Still haven't seen the how it's kind of structured for this deal. You know, do know that $23.5 million of it's guaranteed. Thinking about this, does it change the way that you view the running back spot? If you're giving Dalton Schultz $12 million, do you feel like you're cool giving Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs $12 million? Like the value that one of those two good players, I know we talked earlier about what our price line is here, but does the Dalton Schultz deal, specifically the AAV, change your view about what you want the AAV to be on the running back at all?
It doesn't, because of the fact that we're talking about some pretty premier needs for this team. And I kind of think about it more or less in terms of when we were talking about all these signings and even Fairbairn, and we didn't get your thoughts on that yet. But, you know, when you're starting to talk about just every guy you got to replace or re-sign, and you start thinking about, okay, well, I've got this bottom line number I've got to get to. So as long as I still end up below that bottom line number and still have enough money for the draft picks and some in-season things, then it doesn't matter how I get to it. I just have to make sure that there are a few positions along the way that I could possibly save on. And I don't think that going from Jacobs or Barkley in terms of, I think, like we were talking about earlier, I think there's a chance we can dip under 10 on those guys or be right at around 10. If you do, well, there's a pretty good savings that you can indicate, hey, I overspent a little bit on Schultz. I got a deal or got these guys for a little less. I think that you can find the savings in other starters that you're going to look at and or sign to where I'm not so concerned. I'm not going to let it affect if I have one or both of those guys that are deep into negotiations, want to play for me, and I feel like they could make me that much better.
Yeah, I mean, they're not really related a ton, right? Like, I mean, the tight end market, you're spending on tight end, running back market, you're spending on running back. But you can make the case that, hey, a Saquon or Josh Jacobs is, like, more productive than what Dalton Schultz is going to be, and you're giving $12 million of the pie to Schultz. Like, would you be willing to also do that for running back? The other part of this is Robert Woods. Like, what was the big reason that you signed Schultz? You know, he's productive. C.J. Stroud, familiar with him. Continuity, which has been a theme of the Texans' offense. Bobby Slowick, etc. Because of continuity being at a premium for the Texans, it seems, are you willing to continuity Robert Woods to still keeping him on this team and not cutting him?
Not for me. I think you can find another Robert Woods. I don't think that the continuity is that big of a deal with him as it is with Dalton Schultz, as it is with Tank, as it is with Nico, as it is with guys that became really prominent skill position players in this offense. I think with a Robert Woods, he did actually a little more than I even expected him to do. He made tough catches over the middle that I didn't think he still wanted to do or had in him. But overall, I think there's plenty of receivers that are going to be in the same ballpark to where I can move on from Robert Woods. I think I can replace him, maybe even get someone a little better with a little more left in the tank, and I'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think I would cut Woods. I'm getting the feeling that they're going to keep him, though. I think he's going to be that veteran fourth. Yeah, I think they're going to keep him, and he's going to be that veteran fourth receiver, and then they draft their third receiver instead of having – because he's already under contract, continuity. They liked his leadership. I ultimately think they're going to keep him. Yeah.
I just don't. I think that that's one where, again, like what we were just talking about, like whether you get it back by getting a running back at less than what you thought they were going to – the market was going to dictate – or you end up with the couple guys or some of the guys you and I talked about that they could possibly cut and save, you make the savings up wherever you can. If you can make the savings up by saving five on Woods, that's fine for me.
Yep, 713-780-ESP. I'm going to dip out final 30 minutes. The boys will take you the rest of the way. Spring training overreactions. Javier, a little good and bad today. What are your spring training overreactions? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. But on the way out, I've been telling you for what seems like years, the Gentle Bend is the best. It all starts with the finest ingredients, classic time-honored distilling methods. Gentle Bend uses a revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you will ever taste. You'll love what's not in Gentle Bend, including VOCs. These are volatile organic compounds. The Gentle Bend purification process takes these out, which can lead to coughing when you're drinking the other brands. You get all the flavor, none of the burn, no VOCs. Whether it's the vodka, gin, straight bourbon whiskey, or the cast strength bourbon, it's all fantastic. Next time you head to dinner, ask for it. When you go to your favorite bar, ask for Gentle Bend. Look for it at the liquor store. Whatever's on the way home, pick up a bottle today. If you're looking for plans, head to the Gentle Bend tasting room in Alvin. Gentle Bend has a little kiosk, has a bar inside of Minute Maid Park for those Astros games coming up, and they have a bar inside of the Toyota Center, too, for the Rockets games that are still going on. Or you can just order straight from the website. Head to GentleBend.com, learn the incredible story, the legacy that continues to this day, and also you can order the vodka, the gin, the straight bourbon whiskey, or the cast strength bourbon straight from the website. GentleBend.com. Order now. Gentle Bend, all of the flavor, none of the burn.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, 30 minutes to go in the show. Jeremy had to duck out for some U of H commitments, but I've got BMAC with me, and we're going to take you all the way to the top of the hour with plenty to get to and talk about as we roll through the final 30 minutes. It's gotten to be old hat now after I did it yesterday to sit in the H chair and take us home, Brian.
Yeah, he's starting to feel like a riding bicycle, like it's he never left.
Yeah, it takes a little bit, but you know, just a slight little adjustment to get comfortable again, and then we roll. Look, we've been talking about this a little bit, and it came to my attention that more and more people react and go over the top based on what happens in spring training with the Astros. I think that we were talking, you and I were talking about this yesterday a little bit, but it's worth kind of elaborating a little bit further. Javier pitched well today. He had a mile an hour faster on his fastball. He was throwing fairly, fairly well. In three innings, he had a very effective outing. Now, he got hit with two home runs because two guys hit two fastballs that are real, real good Major League Baseball hitters. Okay? But now people are starting to, the worry warts, and they're starting to worry, and they're starting to point fingers. And is Javier going to be okay? Is he going to be the same guy he was a year ago? Is this going to be a problem? People, relax. Like, this is just still early enough in spring training. Guys are working on pitches. You and I talked about yesterday, and I said, if his velocity is better than it was last year, that should trump everything that you're worried about because he gave up two bombs.
Yeah, the only stat I really care about for Javier and during spring training is the radar gun. That's the only real stat I care about. And so, yeah, if you're telling me his fastball went up 1 mile per hour, then yeah, I'm good. And almost everything else doesn't matter. And yeah, you mentioned that people are concerned about the home runs, but it was a three inning game. Like, who's to say if this was a regular season game, he doesn't end up going six and giving up only those two, and then his outing looks great.
And he's got a quality start.
And not to mention, he struck out six today. Yeah. So obviously, the stuff is working.
And you didn't see the high pitch count numbers. You're not seeing the things that, you know, are customary with Javier. And we talk about this all the time. Like, you look at the Yankees from a pitching perspective, a starting pitcher's only. Rodon, in his last two outings, his fastball is down a mile and a half to 2 miles an hour or more. He's given up 6 bombs in 2 appearances. That's something you can be concerned about, right?
That
because
would concern me.
Now you're getting hit hard. Your fastball velocity is down, and there's plenty of things to red flag. But we talk about the fact that the guys that have to perform in spring training are the guys trying to find roster spots. The middle of your bullpen guys, the guys that we've already seen kind of blow up when we were expecting things like a Souza, like a Coleman. These are the guys you were hoping as veterans were going to step in, and they were being watched with a microscope. Whereas with your starting pitchers, Hunter Brown's working on an off-speed curveball to go with the fastball-slider combination. He's probably going to try that a few times, and he's probably going to miss, and it might get hit, and it might be something that he's not going to worry about, but Twitter's going to lose their minds over. But it's not worth getting all that worked up about.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, I get that they're playing against other Major League Baseball players, other Major League Baseball teams, but it's still, in a way, practice. And you're not gonna kill, you know, an NBA player because he misses a few jump shots shooting from a different part of the court where he's, you know, tried to build his game and not just be like a one spot of the court shooter. So it's kind of the same thing with baseball. If a pitcher's working on a new pitch, then, yeah, he hasn't perfected it yet. That's why he's practicing it. So most guys, and Javier would be in that list, although you do want to see him, I guess, maybe do somewhat well. And, again, 6 strikeouts in 3 innings, that's definitely more than somewhat well. But most guys on this team, I mean, how many people on this team right now would you even be concerned about with spring training numbers? Because, I mean, the vast majority of the roster, other than your middle and long relief options, those roster spots are already locked up. So it's not like this is a bunch of guys or a team filled with a bunch of unproven guys where you're looking to see if they can do something. Almost everybody in this lineup is a proven veteran. So, I mean, there's really not a whole lot to get concerned about.
When you look at it, you see it a lot on Twitter, again, because of the 24-second reaction cycle. Everybody immediately, no matter what they do, and especially the theme since the start of spring training has been, the offense is going to be terrible. They look awful. They can't do anything right.
Is that just PTSD from last year?
I think part of it is because of the fact that the offense wasn't quite what you were hoping it would be, because Abreu was down for most of the year, because of the fact that people were scrutinizing and over-scrutinizing Peña. Altuve was out a good portion of the season. Yordan had some injury time. You look at it and you say, now they couple that with the start of spring training going, they expect this team, just like we're talking about, there's no WBC from a hitter's perspective. With guys that were going to play in the WBC were already, they were ramping up earlier. They were hitting live pitching quicker. They were working on their timing a lot more. These guys are playing golf and getting comfortable and relaxed right now. And there's no need to press for them. And there's no need to press for the fan base because they're going to be fine. Like you said, Altuve missed all that time last year, didn't miss a beat when he came back, and it just was raking. Like, the biggest thing that you need to be worried about with this team offensively isn't what their averages are right now in spring training. It's injuries. As long as they stay away from being injured, even if Jake isn't the guy, you have 2 guys capable of playing center field to where you're still going to be just fine and probably be better than you were a year ago because Maldi sucked.
Yeah, and look, there's really only, I mean, to take it a step further, there's really only 2 guys I would even bother to check the box score for in this lineup. And that's the 2 guys at the very end, which already tells you it's not much of a concern because it's the guys hitting 8 and 9 in whatever order they put Jake Myers and Jeremy Peña. Now, one of them is hitting really well. Jake Myers is hitting over 300. What does it mean? Who knows? We'll find out when the regular season starts. But I think it is worth just kind of doing a temperature check every once in a while to see how he's performing, to see if that bat is starting to come back from what we saw when he was a rookie in 2021. Jeremy Peña, on the other hand, he's hitting 231. It's a little bit low, but last year he hit, you know, high 250s. It's not this some, you know, catastrophic number. You know, he's not hitting, you know, .182 or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that Altuve's hitting 133, that Bregman's hitting .067, I don't care. These are guys who have been in the league for, you know, Altuve's case, like 10 years, Bregman's case, like, you know, I guess 7-8 years. And they've proven they think they're professionals, and when the regular season starts, they'll figure it out. So if they struggle a little bit in spring training, I mean, is it the most ideal thing ever? But it doesn't really matter.
But on the flip side, like Peña, I mean, Abreu's getting hits.
So Abreu's hitting well.
So if Abreu's hitting well, Now, are we supposed – everybody's – calm down. It's spring training, right? Yeah. So if Abreu's hitting well, it's calm down. It's spring training. But then people are losing their mind because offensively they're not putting up crooked numbers and pounding the ball all over the ballpark.
And you know what? Both sides of that, sometimes it's the same person. The same person who will lose their mind over a guy hitting a buck 67 is the same guy that will tell us to slow down Jose Abreu.
Yeah,
it can't be both.
Unless, like I said, unless you're talking about fringe guys and young guys that
like
are trying
said,
to establish themselves.
Myers and Pena are the only ones I remotely care about in the lineup.
Starting pitching, back of the bullpen, and your offensive lineup, not named Jake Myers, to me, are guys that are all working on things and ramping up slowly and gradually getting their game ready for opening day to where yay or nay, good or bad, there should not be a level of concern. The biggest thing you worry about, other than those guys, like I said, that are fringe guys, young guys and veterans that are trying to actually earn a spot, is injuries. As long as they're healthy, and I don't think we're dealing with any guys this year like in the years past where you also go, they might be a little heavy, they might not be in game shape yet.
Several lost weight.
Right? We're talking about guys that have tightened it up, that are in good shape, that look like they're just honing in their skills. And this is a team that was basically a game away from the World Series a year ago, and everybody's back. There's nothing really to worry about. Verlander, everybody says he's going to be fine. The fact that J.P. France threw an inning yesterday in a simulated game means he's starting to get back to where you need him to be. Injuries are the biggest thing you worry about with those core guys, with pitchers and offensive players.
Yeah, the three things I'm most concerned about, and you just mentioned two of them, are when does Verlander return? When is France return, like actually facing live batters? I know he did simulate the game, but face live, major league hitters. Because while Verlander's out, it seems like he's going to be out at least 2 weeks to start the regular season. I mean, Joe Espada and Dana Brown talked about France being one of the guys that would be in the rotation before Verlander gets back. So if France is also behind, that then becomes a concern because it means somebody like Ronel Blanco or maybe you're rushing Spencer Arrighetti into the rotation. So that becomes a concern. And then the third thing, again, we talked about it at the beginning of the segment, is the mile per hour on Christian Javier's fastball, because this goes back to a cash for trash that I had a few weeks ago. I really do think the combination of, the WBC, the shorter off seasons because they were in the World Series back to back years, really started to drain Christian Javier's stamina, not even to mention that it was his first year last year as a full time starting pitcher. And I think that really started to affect his miles per hour, that started to affect his mechanics, and everything kind of fell apart after that resulted in his inconsistency. But if we're seeing the shorter offseason, he's in better shape, the mechanics are better, the fastball mile per hour is up, then I think Javier is going to return to the 11K per 9 type dominant pitcher who could be, I'd argue, the best starting pitcher in the rotation.
The thing that we're talking about, too, which makes this so important to tell people to relax, is we're not talking about guys that are relying on overpowering hitters with 95 to 98 plus. Right?
Yeah.
We're talking about
maybe Hunter. I mean, Hunter's got
I'm
a
talking about
up there.
Specifically in this case, I'm sure. Talking about Fromber and okay. Javier. You've got guys, we know that their stuff, it travels. Their stuff has been effective, above average stuff in Major League Baseball. The biggest thing was a year ago, there was a lot of work on their arms. They were both preparing like they were going to both participate in the WBC. The team went deep into the playoffs, and so you saw some fatigue. I think that was the biggest thing that concerned me, to make sure you utilize the offseason the right way this year. You're not going to ramp up as early. You're not going to focus on throwing as much in the offseason and let your arm kind of rest a little bit so that your velo does go back up, so that what you do need from your fastball is there, because we know your off-speed stuff can translate to being very, very good. So you're right. From the thing that you don't worry about with those two guys is exactly what you're going to have to rely on with Hunter Brown, because his bread and butter is all about fastball, hard slider. Now, if he's working on a curve, I don't care about his spring training ERA, but if that can kind of keep hitters off balance and be that extra pitch that he needs, that's just an extra feather in his cap. The biggest thing for me is depth right now, because there's so many injuries on this for these starting pitchers. We don't know when, but we can project that both Lance and Garcia aren't going to be to All-Star break or later. So that's why between France and JV, you got to make sure that at least one of those guys is sooner rather than later to kind of help fortify the guys that we know are going to be there, the Browns, the Urquidy's, and Javier and Fromber.
And that's what makes, I think, if I were to add a fourth thing that I'm going to watch during the rest of the spring training, would be France, because it's not only his results, because we saw maybe the kind of the shoe drop a little bit after those first eight starts where he was so good last year. So you want to see production there, but you also want to see that he's just ready to take on innings.
Yeah.
Because this bullpen, while it's elite, you know, 7, 8, 9, I don't think it has the sort of depth to take on a massive workload if guys like France and Urquidy aren't able to go deep into the games before Verlander gets back.
See, and the other
that's a problem. If France isn't ready, Urquidy's not going deep, now you're taxing the bullpen, then it could become a concern.
But see, Brian, the other thing, too, is like I said, we're not the things where you're worried about with starting pitchers, other than health, like you were just mentioning, is the fact that I don't want to see Belak at all. But Belak's a guy
But Belak
is a guy that's fair to scrutinize, because every time he goes out there, he has to show that he can get guys out.
Yeah.
Because he's fighting for a spot. Same thing with Blanco. People lost their mind because Blanco was mowing guys down the other day. Well, he's got to do that consistently, because he might be a guy in the short term that has to pick up a whole lot of slack. He, not even in the bullpen. He might be one of your starters for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, Dana Brown, I mean, when he talked about Verlander's injury and the timeline for his return, and we talked about this yesterday on the show, his reason for not going out or not being interested in going out to acquire another starting pitcher to fill that hole while Verlander was out was because he felt comfortable, seemingly, with relying on Ronel Blanco and Spencer Arrighetti, or maybe both.
And he's been all over Arrighetti since the offseason started.
It's too soon for Arrighetti?
I really do.
Yeah, I do too.
I think that the timing is completely wrong. And I think that he's a guy that's better suited to take your time with him, let him get the experience in camp, let him go back to Sugar Land and show that he if he starts in Sugar Land and gets off to a hot start, now you've got an option, but you don't start his clock before you have to. Blanco's been there, done that. He has way better stuff than Belak. You have an option there as well. But I just think that as much as he was all over celebrating Spencer Arrighetti, it's too soon.
Yeah, I would let Blanco fail before I used Arrighetti, because Arrighetti, I mean, while he's obviously the Astros' top pitching prospect, and I think he's not a top 100 guy. Jacob Melton's the only top 100 guy. But he's not this sort of prospect that's been a can't-miss guy all along the way.
He's like, kind of like J.P. France a year or
kind
so
of,
ago.
Well, yeah, except for age, but...
I'm just saying, like, he wasn't a top 100 guy. He wasn't really a guy you factored in, and all of a sudden he was there.
Right, he's not this guy that you've seen coming and being ready for this moment now for the last 4 years, because he's been that elite, elite prospect. He kind of seemed like he first seemed to come on the radar, I think, for outside the hardcore fans, basically like last summer. That's kind of when he got elevated into a notable prospect status. So, yeah, it just feels too early. I would riddle it, Urquidy, and I would let Ronel Blanco and maybe even Belak fail before I would bring up Arrighetti, not because Arrighetti couldn't possibly be good. It just feels like you might rush him, and if you bring him up and he gets hammered, what does that do to his confidence?
Yeah, no doubt. I think that it's like you said, let Blanco fall down, but let him get back again and try again before I have to see Belak.
Yeah.
As long as that's the case, I don't want to see the oh shucky darn Belak face again when he gets absolutely bonfired.
Unless you're playing in Colorado, he dominated the Rockies twice.
Yeah, well, great. He sure did. And then when he wasn't playing Colorado, he was throwing gas on a bonfire that I don't need to see again. So he's like Hunter Mashinsky to me, because I'm going to continue to call him the guy.
Give the wrong name.
Because I always give the wrong name, because I don't want to see his name on the back of a jersey wearing an Astros uniform. Those two guys I've seen enough of. They can be full-time space Cowboys or less, in my opinion. But I think that Blanco has the stuff to be able to be a major league pitcher. I think Blanco's a guy that could easily factor into your middle of your bullpen in this season.
Yeah, and that'll be the interesting thing as we wrap up the segment, to see, like, once Verlander does get back, especially if you knock on wood to get Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers back, which obviously far from a guarantee, but you'll have at that point maybe three actual starting pitchers as guys that the Astros might be using in middle relief. Like, I think Blanco, France, and maybe even Urquidy could be in that spot, and then if they obviously perform well in that, then, like, because the biggest concern, other than I know you have a concern with Jake Myers, would be, like, do they have the guys, if a starter gets knocked out, to get them through to the seventh inning before they get to their stud relievers? And right now you probably would say no, but if those guys then become Blanco, who's pitched well, France, who's pitched well, and Urquidy, then all of a sudden that concern could get wiped away.
Can I also just throw that wild card out there? I don't know if he filed the paperwork or not. I just have a sneaking suspicion we haven't seen the last of Michael Brantley. I think it's almost like their insurance.
I know. He went through a lot to get back.
But I think it's almost their insurance policy without having to go look for it. I think that to the point maybe. You just made, like if they need a left-handed bat and he doesn't
like he
have
to Roger Clemens
he doesn't have to ramp up. He doesn't have to rush back. He's now in camp. He's getting some swings in. He's in the cages. He's there if you need him. He's also helping other guys. And then, oh, by the way, if I need him, he's right there, and he's still ramped up enough that I can get him where I need him to be.
Maybe so. I could see if he's around the team every day, and I don't know if they've clearly defined like what his exact role or like what how frequently he'll be with the team. But I could see him being around the guys every day if that is indeed his role, where he would get the itch. And look, he still performed well at times last year. He had the big home run in Cleveland, I believe, in game three or game four against the Guardians to get the Astros on the board before Jose Abreu tacked on. So he's still shown that he's got a good bat. I would have no doubt that if you gave him a couple weeks to get into shape and take a few hacks, that he could come out and hit at least 275.
Like I said, you're just looking for a bench guy. He could be even if he is the replacement for what you were considering Singleton and Cabbage for. If Michael Brantley's sitting on your bench and he can provide a pinch hit when you need him and he can be a spot replacement in left field, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it'd just be, I guess, what – because I remember – I wish I had the exact quote in front of me, but I remember seeing quotes from Brantley that the rehab to get back last season over the last year and a half really took a lot out of him, and he was just basically refusing to do that again. So I guess if he felt right, I could see him considering it, but I think if there was any setback, then he would instantly
and that's
be
all
done.
Fine and dandy, too, because on the flip side, you don't need him right now.
No, you don't.
And there might be a time you do, there might be a time you don't, but now there's not the pressure of, I got to get ramped up, and old Bagwell put the whole thing on me to say I'd be ready by opening day. Now every day that I haven't been ready when I'm supposed to be, I'm pressing even harder. Now it's relaxed. It's just missing the game. It's you're in camp, so why not just continue to kind of take some swings and work on some things? And if you feel good doing it, then keep going. Ramp it up a little bit more. And he's sitting there waiting as a resource because he's not going to play for anybody else.
No, I couldn't see that. I could. It's not. I wouldn't dismiss it as not a possibility that he couldn't go the Roger Clemens route and like return in July. It's definitely possible.
All right. Well, we got one segment to go in the show. That means it's the car wreck of the day. Plenty of nominees yet again today. But if you want to make a last minute nomination, 713-780-3776. Call or text the show. Get them in. You can hit us on Twitch. You can hit us on Twitter. You can hit us up on YouTube. But we have one segment to go. It's BMAC and I on the Killer Bee Show right here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Back for that glorious segment that everybody can't wait and can't get enough of. I'm sorry, Alex, but Joe already got plenty of nominations for some of his missteps, but Alex always the king of nominating.
Well, one we played earlier was from Tuesday, so it had to be a retroactive Tuesday car wreck.
Oh, he had one today.
The Kobe Cam Whitmore thing.
Yeah. So Joe has already has nominations. Right off the top, Pena loves Mailbag Mondays, and he loves to come up with these really well-thought-out questions for us to answer of like an either-or. Not so much when he's just free-flowing on a discussion about...
So you didn't think to take out?
I mean, we were saying if you could have Brantley or Watt now. Right now. And he took it to the level of, well, what if it was in their prime, and then said, oh, yeah, if JJ's in his prime and Brantley, I'm taking Brantley. What the hell's wrong with you, Pena?
Yeah, saying you would take, I mean, Watt, as we talked about, I think you could argue is a top three defensive player of all time. I mean, what would the equivalent of that be for Brantley? Like a top three hitter of all time? We call him Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays? I mean it's ridiculous.
That one, just sorry, Pena, but not sorry. You made the list.
Yeah, that's a definitely good one. I think we got to give another nomination to the Rockets. Blowing a 20-point lead yesterday at home, no less. Look, Clippers are a good team. They were without Russell Westbrook, but you still got Paul George and Kawhi and James. But, yeah, you can't blow a 20-point lead at home.
You blew a 20-point lead. You fouled jump shooters. You turned the ball over multiple times without getting a shot down in crunch time. And Alpi missed two huge free throws.
Yeah, that foul that Alpi had on Kawhi that gave him the and one on the jumper was just a dumb foul.
Yeah, Jabari got him on the elbow. There was
It was Jabari.
And then Jalen Green reaching, and Powell got fouled on a jumper. It's just, you just don't do that. And credit to Ryan Hollins for pointing that out, because normally he's just, oh, Greg! But he gave us something that we could actually work with there, too. So, yeah, the Rockets' fourth quarter definitely in the mix there as well. Now, we've had someone text this, as well as you guys finding this. Pepperdine and Pacific in a basketball game today. Pepperdine led 56-9 at the half.
56-9 at halftime. Pacific didn't score their first bucket until 12 minutes into the game, which at which point made it 26-2 Pepperdine. Yeah, and it only got worse from there. Like you said, Pepperdine led 56-9 at halftime. It should be mentioned that Pacific is a bad team. They won like six games this year, but Pepperdine only won 12. It's not like they're some juggernaut.
Pepperdine Pacific doesn't seem to be a game I'd want to watch anyway. No.
Well, but especially if it's 56-9.
But when it's 56-9, yeah,
although
I think that just
solidifies
that. Although, actually,
when it's 56-9, I might watch it more just to see the total beatdown. That actually, the car wreck.
Like the legit car wreck, that you can't stop looking at it, no matter what, when you're driving down the road. Now, there's a couple. Someone wanted to nominate Gilbert Arenas for his take about just to improve defense in the NBA, eliminate European players.
Yeah, that wasn't from today, but it certainly definitely was a car
wreck situation.
But we used
it today, so it qualifies.
That's fair.
And then,
you got one more?
The original white chocolate, Jason Williams, said that Brian Windhorst's take on saying that Allen Iverson wouldn't be effective in today's NBA and it wouldn't be acceptable. And he said, how can anybody say anything negative about Allen Iverson of all people, or just anyone in general that has a neckline like Windhorst? Then you look at the video, and Jay Will needs Doc Linville because he's doing the hard comb down. Jay Will, with a hairline like that, you can't be going at Wendy's neck, bro.
Yeah. Call Doc Linville, exactly.
Seriously.
So, who's our
the Rockets'
today?
Fourth quarter to me is a no-brainer.
Sorry?
Rockets' fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Rockets' fourth quarter could be the car wreck of the day.
There you go. Well, let's hope what's not a car wreck of the day. The technical issues that may face us as Game On comes up next. Because Barry's on remote. Jerome's on remote. You are going to be on remote. Who's going to call in? How's it all going to work? Let's hope it's not a car wreck, but you got to stay tuned and listen. It's my man, Barry Laminack, Jerome Solomon, and Game On coming up next. For Brian McDonald, I'm Joel Blank. Jeremy will be back tomorrow as well. Thanks for being in the Hive. Thanks for being a part of the Killer Bees. We'll talk to you tomorrow.